Welcome to another Cut On Live Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.
Now, Sean, you've obviously been on the Port Power bandwagon there for a little while, so you must have been ecstatic when they beat Geelong.
Well, it's interesting because my mum barracks for Geelong.
Wow.
She grew up in Victoria, Polo Bay. She went to school in Geelong, and she hates Port Adelaide. But I got to say that I went to the footy. I was lucky enough to get an invite with Wayne Philp to go to the footy. And so I'd been to the Crows, as we talked about, a few weeks before. And then on Thursday night last week, I got the opportunity to go to the first final, Port Adelaide versus Geelong. And it was a ripper of a game.
What was the crowd like? Was it 25,000?
It was, I imagine, but it was chockers. Like, comparing the two, and I think I mentioned the crowd in our other podcast, and the crowd were just vibrant and loud, and the atmosphere I just loved. It was brilliant. Have you ever been to the Port game when they do Never Tear Us Apart at the beginning, just before the bounce? Isn't that amazing?
Well, I liken it to I saw Liverpool when they came out and played Adelaide United in the soccer a number of years ago, and they sang that song, We Will Never Walk Alone. And even though it's a different type of beat, it's the same type of atmosphere that's created.
And just the expectation of that happening, and obviously it was a very pro-power crowd. There was, I could see a few Geelong people sort of around where we were sitting, and across the area you could see a few Geelong jumpers, but the Geelong supporters must have felt very outnumbered. But I'll tell you, the atmosphere was brilliant from the beginning, and it just got better and better. Like, the noise that came out of those 25,000 people was crazy.
Now, I saw Geelong was ahead leading into halftime, but Port actually led. What happened there?
Well, I would say I felt that it was a really tight tussle the whole game, really tight. I think but in the first half, I felt Geelong were playing better, but they weren't Hawkins had a few shots on goals. But to Port's credit, they just kept pushing him wide, and so he was taking marks right out on the boundary, very tough angles. And then, I don't watch enough of him, but you could see there were players in the 50 that he could give it off to, but he just seemed intent on having shots on goal and obviously just didn't work for them. And then he did later on in the game get a few shots where he could have had a shot on goal from a better angle but missed. But right on halftime, just before the siren, Brad Ebert took a mark just inside the 50. And to be honest, if I'm going to be critical of anything during the game from Port, their marking ability was really limited. They just didn't seem to have that real marking power, which the ball came to the ground a lot. But Ebert did get a mark, and the siren was just about to go. Everyone knew that, so he just steadied. And the siren actually went as the ball hit his boot, but he kicked truly and put them in front. So it was 4-2-3-7 at halftime. And I thought, wow, that is a really telling goal, because it just gave Port that sort of momentum going into halftime, which it may have been a different story, of course, if that hadn't happened.
What was the atmosphere like at that point as it went through? It must have been one of the highlights of the day as far as the crowd's concerned.
Oh, the crowd loved it. They went, and they were on their feet a lot, and it was hard. I was certainly swept along, and it was really – so the crowd were I know Crows talk about the 19th man, but I tell you what, Port had that on that night.
Well, it's interesting. You highlighted Hawkins. He ended up with 5 points on the day. Originally, when Geelong and Port met at footy at Adelaide Oval early in the season, Geelong thrashed him by 10 goals, and Hawkins was the main impetus for Geelong winning by so much.
Well, Hawkins can be a bit on and off, can't he? And I think, you know, he obviously can kick a lot of goals, and he's had a very, very good season. But Port's defence has been the number one defence in the AFL this year, and their zone defence really meant that there was just no – they were not giving him any space in the middle of the 50. He had to lead out on angles, and they were constantly pushing him out here. And even though he was taking marks, it was like a one-on-one competition. So he could take those marks, but he was taking them in areas where it was difficult for him to score, whereas down the other end – Charlie Dixon, he had a, I mean, in terms of stats, you'd say he had a shocker of a night, but it's interesting when you're watching, he did not stop working, that guy. And he's a big guy. Like, he was just creating, but he, I don't think he took a grab all night, but he was constantly like two or three people on him. And so it was a different way of playing defense, effective. Neither big full forward had an impact in that sense. But I think the ball coming to the ground gave some of the other Port players, like Stephen Motlop, kicked three great goals, those type of players, that gave them an opportunity to score.
Well, the third quarter is often called the premiership quarter because often it decides the game. In fact, Port kicked 3-1 that quarter. How did that quarter unravel? How did you see it?
Well, it was, and that's, I was thinking that goal by Ebert just on the siren, and Port came out running, and they were just a much more competitive, fierce, like the actual bodywork, like the tackling, the ferocity just increased in that third quarter. And they really dominated that quarter. And as you can see, it wasn't a high-scoring game, but there was a real tension in the crowd. And even like talking to the people around us, you could sense that there was still this apprehension. Will they come back? Will they come back? We're not far enough in front. But that third quarter, Port dominated. They really did.
And but didn't Geelong hit the front in the third quarter?
Well, no, they didn't. They came on, they kicked a couple of points, but it was pretty even. But then Port just kicked away from them. Geelong got a goal late in the quarter, and Port, again, as I said, had dominated. The ball did come out, and there was no one in the 50 in Geelong's forward line, no one. And so that's the type of game, was just tight, scrappy football. But the ball did come out quickly. And there were two Port players. I think Hamish Hartley was one. I can't remember the other, but they, rather than one going for the mark, they both went for it. And it was sort of just inside the square. They sort of spoiled each other. The ball went over the top and Dangerfield ran onto it and just kept running. He took about two or three bounces and kicked from the square. And that was the only goal that they kicked that quarter. And then in the last quarter, again, just a very, very, very tight, you know, real finals football that last quarter. And Port kicked a couple of goals, and that was the sealer. Geelong got one, but they ended up with 5-12. But most of those points in the last quarter were the ball being punched through. And in fact, the goal they did score was just out of a stoppage. And Hamish Hartley almost got his finger to it. In fact, they did the review that went on actually for about 3 minutes. And it looked so much like, but you could see Hartlett did not sort of remonstrate. He, as soon as the goal went through, I mean, most players straight away, you see him touch, but he, and so I thought, no, he hasn't touched that. And that was the outcome. Then Geelong got that goal, but it wasn't enough.
Yeah, well, Geelong had 17 scoring shots to 13, but obviously the accuracy of Port kicking 9-4 made a huge difference.
It did. And like people, if they kick this or they kick that. But yeah, I mean, and obviously those things will have a big impact on the game. And Hawkins was the big difference. I mean, if he kicked a couple, it would have been much closer. But Port just seemed to respond. Like, even like the whole time they kept Geelong would, like that first half, the sort of score was very close. It would be up and down. But Port just seemed to have the answer. But as you said, when it counted, I think Port really showed that's why they've been on top all year. And I know before the finals, I think the experts around Australia were sort of saying they were ranked fifth chance of winning the premiership. But, you know, both, and of course the Victorian-centric media said, of course, Geelong and Richmond, both of them got knocked off on the weekend. So Brisbane and Port, in fact, both home ground advantage maybe.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Hawkins kicked 5 points and of course, Motlop got the 3 goals, which you said earlier. So they were the barometers for their teams.
Well, Motlop didn't have a lot of possession, but, man, he finished. That was the thing, I guess, in finals. Like, he was just there. And one of his goals was he ran across the front of the pack, got the ball, and you think he's running away from the goals. A guy was right on him, and he's just sort of – done a little pivot and kicked the back across his body straight through. And I think that was the Port just finished. And there was a few goals there under pressure, set shots, and they made them pay.
Well, it was a good first week of the finals. Brisbane beat Richmond, as you said, 15 points. Collingwood got up and beat the West Coast by 1 point.
The West Coast were coming back.
Yeah.
But not enough. I mean, again, Collingwood did what they needed to do in that late part of the game, and then West Coast made their run, but just wasn't enough.
And St Kilda and Western Bulldogs, I was watching that game, and St Kilda went out to like a 4-goal lead, 28 points, I think it was, and Western Bulldogs kept coming and coming and coming, and they just fell short.
Again, and St Kilda are interesting. I think they're going to be an interesting team. Whether they've got enough to get over Richmond, I don't know. But they played well early on, didn't they? They faded, but now they're coming back, the last part of their season and last week. So it could be a great game. I think Richmond, most people would be back in Richmond, but St Kilda could be an upset this week.
Yeah, Paddy Ryder was the best player by country mile.
And he injured himself, so yeah, that's not going to help, is it?
No, and you've got Richmond, St Kilda, and whoever wins that game will play Port in the preliminary final, and the Cats play Collingwood, and the winner will play Brisbane. So it's all set up, and if the finals continue right through, it'll be probably one of the most exciting final series.
I think the games from the weekend were all very tight games, and that's what you want in the finals, don't you? So let's hope we get more of that, and go Power.
Now, you were talking to me off air in regards to the SNFL with Central District and parting ways with their first-year coach, Jeff Andrews, who was on a three-year contract.
Yeah, well, that sort of took me by surprise because we spoke to Jeff when he first came over. And, of course, Central's, to be fair, haven't had the greatest of seasons for the last couple of years. I mean, this season, again, was not great for them, but they finished well. So it was a bit of a surprise thinking, okay, maybe you're in sort of a new phase, a rebuilding phase, you know, and after Roy Laird leaving, which is a big hole to fill, isn't it? It's going to be hard for any person to step into those shoes. But it just surprised me that after a season they let him go.
Well, it was a 14-game season. First half of the year, they did not win a game in the first seven. They were 0-6 with one draw, and everyone was sort of saying they're going to be wooden spooners. But the second half of the year, they actually won 3 games, lost 4, and one of those losses was by 1 point to the running Premier Glenelg, and Central's actually beat the minor Premier Eagles last kick of the day in the last minor round game. So it was pointing to, you know, quite a recovery and a lot of promise going forward, I would have thought.
Well, that's what I would have thought. And I mean, yes, we knew the season had been terrible to start with, but they were certainly getting better and better, and to have those results, but that sort of idea of letting a second year coach into 1 year into a 3 year contract, there must have been rumblings throughout the season. Oh, I imagine.
Look, I heard plenty of rumblings. There's rumblings about it, you know, him not you know, abiding by his contract conditions and about players sort of saying they're not going to play. But you hear that basically with every coach.
Well, you do. You hear it a lot, and you think surely the head coach has got to have that opportunity to do their own thing and run their show and have a plan that they – I mean, that's why you employ them, don't you?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to just be a figurehead for someone else, well, that doesn't seem to be the point. But, of course, I'm not involved, so I don't really know. But it seemed to be that – because now, of course, they're going to have to pay – I mean, they're going to, I guess, have to pay him out for his contract, I imagine.
Look, I don't know what's happening there, but it's interesting that they made such a sudden move, and I think it's because last year they were chasing Jade Sheedy and they thought they had him, but they left it go that long that Sheedy actually got snaffled by the Eagles. So they obviously don't want to make the same mistake, so they've made the decisions early, and Sturt sort of they let go Nathan Guama, who actually was a Central District Premiership player in 2007. So he could be a possibility. Marty Matner, that coached Sturt to 2 flags in
But the talk is, there's been a lot of talk about Paul Thomas.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a great bloke.
Yeah, he's my favourite. I think.
Is this because Central's can only have, I mean, you think they've had a coach there for 18 years who was really Central's born and bred. Is that what Central's need? Is do they need someone who's just been involved with the club from day one?
Look, I got no idea. I just, whether it's Marty Matner who may be a chance, although I think he'll be wrapped up with Sturt, Nathan Grimer, Paul Thomas, you know, whoever comes on board, I'm going to support them because I support the club. And if I personally would have liked to see Jeff Andrews given another year to develop where he was going because, you know, I started to like some of his game plan, the way it was developing. So, yeah, it's hard.
Well, you'll never know now because he's not going to be there. And I guess it's not going to be long now because I guess they can't afford to wait too long to make their decision because, as you said, the market's out there and people will be looking for jobs. And
well, I'm sure we'll have some more footy to talk about in the coming weeks. But for now, so ends another Carlo and Lay Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
I'm Sean Carlin.